Welcome in to Outkick the Coverage, the podcast. I want to tell you off the jump here, go listen to our Wins and Losses podcast. It's podcast exclusive. If you like this podcast, I promise you'll like that one. Paul Feinbaum is the guest this week. Great feedback rolling in. Go download it. Go listen. Go rate it. Appreciate all of the support in the podcast universe. We have got Frank Isola here with us talking about the Knicks' potential disaster, but we are going to open with Vanderbilt winning a national championship. Where does Tim Corbin rank in the annals of college coaching performances now that he has got his second national title? I think that's a debate well worth having. Also, we'll talk about Donald Trump's response to Megan Rapinoe, and we'll tell you about a great grandmother in Philadelphia who managed to kill a cobra with a shovel.
You're going to have to kill your pal.
This is a real story. All that and more coming in Outkick. Appreciate you spending your Thursday morning with us. Enjoy the podcast now.
Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis live every weekday morning from 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern, 3 to 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for Outkick the Coverage at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every morning on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Live from the Geico Outkick Studios. We got a lot to get to today. I'm going to make fun of the Knicks a lot, I think, honestly. For those of you out there waking up across the country, there's reports that they may swing and miss on Kevin Durant, Kawhi Leonard, and Kyrie Irving. But have no fear, Knicks fans. They are going to go aggressively after DeMarcus Cousins. It's not a punchline. That's real. So, good. Congratulations, Knicks. The summer of free agency you've all been waiting for is basically ending in a horror film status. You have been wiped out by the serial killer bad guy on a horror film, and you are now sort of stumbling drunkenly around trying to figure out how to spend your money. That is the latest report. We'll get to it. We've actually got Frank Isola joining us from New York City early in the morning to discuss the latest absurdity from New York as it pertains to the Knicks. So we will get to that. But first, big time win last night. College World Series has been a lot of fun to watch. And the Vanderbilt men's baseball team got its second national title under head coach Tim Corbin. And they did it pretty easily in a dominating fashion. Never really in doubt. Down 1-0, I guess, in the first inning. Came back to score, I believe it was the next 7 or 8 runs, whatever the number was there, before they walked off, ended up winning this thing 8-2. Not a lot of drama associated with it, but it was a hell of a season. And we have the final call here, and then I'm going to talk about an incredible aspect of this title. But first, here's what it sounded like last night when the College World Series came to an end with the Vanderbilt Commodores on top of all of baseball.
Thomas lines it to center field. Backing up is DeMarco. He'll make the catch, and the Doors have done it. Vanderbilt, baseball national champions for the second time in school history. An 8-2 win over Michigan as Vanderbilt claims the title in Omaha.
One of the most amazing things about the Vanderbilt title, and this is their second now under Tim Corbin, is Tim Corbin is up there in college sports with one of the most impressive accomplishments in all of sports. When you look at what Vanderbilt baseball was before Tim Corbin and what they have been since he left, since he got his really kind of things rolling in a big way, Vanderbilt baseball was not in any way remotely relevant. We talked, if you listen to my Wins and Losses podcast with Mike Leach, and Mike Leach said on that show, determining whether or not somebody is a good coach is often not a function of whether or not they win championships, although it matters. It's looking at the difference between what they have been able to accomplish and what everyone else in the same job has been able to accomplish. And Tim Corbin now has been at Vanderbilt for 17 years, and he in college baseball is a lot like Bill Snyder in college football, in that Bill Snyder has done one of the all-time greats, if not the greatest coaching job all time, when you look at the history of Kansas State relative to what he's done. Kansas State football, basically doesn't exist without Bill Snyder. He has made that program relevant in some way. Vanderbilt baseball basically doesn't exist without Tim Corbin. I want to hit you with these stats. Think about this. Vanderbilt in its history as a program in baseball had been to three NCAA tournament appearances when Tim Corbin took over this job. They had been to the NCAA tournament in 1973, 1974, and 1980. That's it. It's not that hard to make the NCAA tournament by and large in college baseball. They had won one conference tournament championship, all right, since Tim Corbin got to Vanderbilt. The entire history of the program, they have been to three NCAA tournament appearances. He gets there, and they go, listen to this, 2004, 2006, 2007, 2008, 2009, 2010, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, and 19. He's missed, what, 1 year basically since 2004 of making the NCAA tournament at Vanderbilt men's baseball. And in the process, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, he's been to 15 NCAA tournaments at Vanderbilt. And prior to his arrival, they had been to three. I mean, this is one of the most impressive coaching jobs that we have ever seen in the history of college baseball. And honestly, in the history of college sports. And again, it's not just that Corbin now has won two national titles as a head coach, which is rare no matter what you coach in sports, college sports. There are a lot of people who get that first title. A second title is incredibly rare by and large, whether it's football, whether it's baseball, whether it's basketball. There just aren't that many coaches who win more than one national title because winning one alone is so hard. But I want you to think about what I just said. The history of Vanderbilt baseball is really not very existent, right? There's been only three NCAA tournament championships and appearances, and they've already won two national titles now and been to 15 NCAA tournaments since then. Put it into context, Tim Corbin has almost won as many national titles at Vanderbilt as they had NCAA tournament appearances before he arrived. He's got two national titles. They'd only been to three NCAA tournaments before he arrived. It's a pretty unbelievable stat, which is why Kumar Rocker, who was the most outstanding player at the College World Series, will be, I think, assuming he stays healthy, the number one overall pick in the Major League Baseball draft in 2 years. After the game, he compared Tim Corbin to Nick Saban.
What do you want to say to Coach Corbin as you give him national championship number two?
Special. I said it earlier in an interview. I said he's a GOAT. He's like Saban. He's got it.
And that's an aggressive comparison no matter who you are. But something that Corbin has done that Saban did not is he's made a program that was totally not relevant, relevant in a big way on the national stage. Now, in addition to Vanderbilt winning this title, is a story that I think is pretty compelling. One of the most compelling stories I have heard associated with a championship. 4 years ago, Vanderbilt had a stud pitcher on their team named Donnie Everett. He was likely to be a high-end first-round pick. His final pitch in the SEC season came in the SEC championship game, I believe it was. He threw 101 miles per hour in the SEC tournament. In his final pitch there. They finished that. I believe they won the SEC championship in the tournament that year. Vanderbilt comes back home. They get a day, go practice earlier in the day, get a day off, and then they are set to host a regional in at Vanderbilt. This is in 2016. Coming off back-to-back title game appearances in 2014 and 15. They won one. They lost the other one. It is now 2016. Vanderbilt is really good, and it is a story you probably have heard, but maybe haven't. And Donnie Everett is this kid's name. Let me tell you a little bit about Donnie Everett. He's the only child of a couple from an area of town called Clarksville, Tennessee. for those of you listening nationwide. Clarksville, Tennessee is a military town. It's where, you know, a lot of people, it's kind of a bedroom community to the city of Nashville. And it's where Donnie Everett grows up. His dad is a mailman. His dad is a mailman in Bellmeade, which is a part of Nashville. It's a long drive away from Clarksville. Big drive. Bellmeade is also the wealthiest area of Nashville. It's where, if you live in Nashville on the west side of the city, there are huge multi-million dollar mansions. It is the per capita wealthiest place in Nashville and one of the wealthiest places in the country. Donnie Everett's dad would show up every day for work, drive all the way across the city of Nashville early in the morning before the sun is up, and work as a mailman in this jurisdiction. Bellmeade is not far from Vanderbilt. When he would work in that jurisdiction, he would drive past Vanderbilt University. He would also then end up delivering mail to many Vanderbilt alums, some of the most successful in the entire city and, frankly, in the entire country, who were Vanderbilt alums and would live in this multi-million dollar mansion. His son was an incredible baseball player. There's all sorts of stories about what he accomplished when he was playing in Clarksville, but one of the most amazing is that he was not only an incredible pitcher who would have been a first-round draft pick, he's an incredible hitter. And they'll tell stories about how, for instance, Donnie Everett hit a three-run homer in the top of the ninth and then came back out in the bottom of the ninth and struck out the side to win a huge baseball game, right? I mean, he was not only a dominant pitcher, he was one of the most dominant baseball players that anybody's ever seen in the state of Tennessee. And so his freshman year, he's well on his way to turning into one of the greatest pitchers to ever come through Vanderbilt University. And there's been a lot of them, right? Whether it's David Price, whether it's Walker Buehler. And they get a day off in the afternoon. And he and a couple of teammates decide that they are going to go fishing. And they go out to go fishing. And while they are there, he decides to swim across a lake where they are fishing. And inexplicably, halfway across, he just starts to struggle and he drowns right in front of his teammates. And it's the day before the NCAA tournament is set to start. And Tim Corbin gets a call, has to go and meet with the team, including his teammates who were there watching Donnie Everett drown. Vanderbilt goes out, and this kid, Donnie Everett, is the only child of the couple that I was telling you about who live in Clarksville, Tennessee. Their only child, an incredible dream for those of you out there who have kids. This is basically every parent's worst nightmare, to get a call about something this bad that comes out of absolutely nowhere. And the Vanderbilt baseball team is shocked to its core. Tim Corbin, who I know well, tells his wife Maggie, at the end of the season, Vanderbilt goes out hosting this tournament, NCAA tournament games at their home stadium, and loses two straight games, gets absolutely obliterated. The team is just shook to its core. Has no interest in playing games. They're going to the funeral. Everything surrounding it is just an unmitigated disaster. After that game, to end the season, Vanderbilt baseball team just sits in the dugout for an hour and a half and doesn't hardly move. Everybody's just in shock, overridden with grief, unable to process what's just occurred. Things are so bad in the immediate aftermath of the way that season ended and the Donnie Everett loss that Tim Corbin will tell his wife Maggie, like, I just don't know if I can continue to do this anymore. That's how beaten and shaken to the very essence Tim Corbin is. Then something interesting happens. Vanderbilt baseball team embraces the Everett family, the mom and the dad, who are overcome with grief, but lean into the Vanderbilt baseball program as a way to deal with that grief. This is sports in one of its most pure aspects, with the ability to heal. And so Tim Corbin picks up the phone and he calls a couple months after the death, and he's going up to Cape Cod to watch a lot of the Vanderbilt baseball players in the Cape Cod League, summer league up there. A lot of them go up there and work out and play during the summer after the baseball season ends. And he just extends an offer, he and his wife do, to the Everett family. Hey, you know, this may be crazy, but would you guys be interested in coming up to watch, you know, baseball with us in Cape Cod? And the Everett family, who basically hasn't left their house, according to the dad, since the death of their son, says yes. And that creates a beautiful relationship and synergy between these grieving parents and the Vanderbilt baseball team. And so in the ensuing years, the Everett family has basically become a part of the Vanderbilt baseball team. They attend a lot of the games. They're around all of the kids. There are seven of them that were teammates of Donnie Everett on this year's team. And after the game, I tweeted out a video of this, but the Everett family traveled to Omaha, sat right by Maggie Corbin. If you watch this game on television, they were sitting directly behind her, and they were on the field celebrating with the Vanderbilt men's baseball team after this game ended. He would have been a senior on this team. So almost 4 years to the day, 3 years, I guess, to the day, after Donnie Everett died in 2016 as a freshman finishing his first year at Vanderbilt University, in what would have been his senior year, Vanderbilt won the national championship, and his parents were on the field celebrating that championship. We talk a lot about the power, I think, on this show of sports, and also just what it can mean, not for who wins, right? There are lots of games that everybody has played in or watched over the years in sports. But ultimately, I think the reason why most people are fans of sports, and certainly I would imagine why a huge majority of you listening right now, are for the community and connection that being part of a tribe, any one particular team, brings to your life. And I just think the most compelling and incredible part of Vanderbilt winning this championship last night was the way they were able to do it in the memory of Donnie Everett, and the way that they were able to include Donnie Everett's family in that experience on the field after the game, traveling with them, having them in Omaha. If you have been around tragedy, and hopefully most of us have not had anything like what happened to Donnie Everett happen, but you know that one of the ways that you can respond to tragedy is to pretend it didn't happen and to move away from it and to try and forget what happened and go on with your life, because if you think about it too much, it can be overwhelming. What Tim Corbin did and what Maggie Corbin, his wife, did was they leaned into that tragedy, and in a way when many people, I think, would have tried to pretend this never happened and take it away from their memory, they brought the memory of Donnie Everett and his family into the embrace of the Vanderbilt baseball family. And the ending to Donnie Everett's career at Vanderbilt as a result is in no way his death. It's the championship that brought his team and his parents together in remembrance of him. Every game since Donnie Everett died, Tim Corbin has jogged outfield and touched on the wall a memory that Vanderbilt put on the Hawkins Field wall, and he does it on the road. He did it in Omaha to remember and remind him of Donnie Everett. And I can't think of a better remembrance than what we saw on the field last night. So it's a compelling story. It's a if you haven't read it, I kind of gave you the outlines as I know it, as Tim and Maggie have become friends of my family here in Nashville. They're incredible people, but this is an incredible story. And I imagine there will be a lot of words written about it here in the near future. If you follow me on Twitter, I'll share some of those if you want to read more about the story of Donnie Everett. But it is really a compelling one. When we come back, we'll dive into some of this NBA craziness, right? What are the Knicks actually going to do? Frank Isola is going to join us live in New York City. I think you guys will enjoy the info that he gives us as we are now, what, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, about 3 days and change away from the start of NBA free agency. What do we think is actually going to happen? We will discuss with him. This is Outkick the Coverage on Fox Sports Radio.
This is Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis.
Welcome back, Geico, Outkick Studios. We go up to New York City, where Frank Isola is, at the Frank Isola on Twitter. You can see him on Around the Horn. You can read him at The Athletic, listen to him at SiriusXM. Frank, when you saw the news start to come out last night that the Knicks may not have a chance at Kawhi, they may not have a chance at Kyrie Irving, they may not have a chance now at Kevin Durant, but they're thinking about signing DeMarcus Cousins, what in the world did you think?
Well, I think a couple of things. Number one, you know, if you go back to that Kristaps Porzingis trade, you know, the Knicks, the reason they made that trade was so they can get two guys. And now if you don't get anybody, how are you going to look at, how are you going to look the media in the face and tell you that that was a good trade when if you hung on to Porzingis, Clay, you could be entering training camp with Kristaps Porzingis and R.J. Barrett. So you traded away an asset to Dennis Smith Jr. And any player that Dallas wants to get rid of, I'd be concerned about, because I think the Dallas front office coaching staff is pretty smart. But if you also think about it, when the Knicks got rid of Porzingis, the way they set it up was he forced our hand, he didn't want to be here. Then it was he threatened to go back to Europe, because what the Knicks are trying to tell you is if this doesn't work out, we still had no choice. As you know, Kristaps Porzingis was on his rookie deal. When you're on your rookie deal, the team controls everything about you. If they want you, they could keep you. If they don't want you, then they can get rid of you, because even if Porzingis had gone out as a restricted free agent and gotten like a big contract, the Knicks would have had the opportunity to match it. So I think for them, you know, the Knicks, who love to talk, we've changed the culture, we're perceived differently. Well, you went 17-65. You know, the record is what it is. You've gone 18 years and you've had the worst record in the NBA. So you just can't, it's not about talk and telling people that you've changed. You have to prove it on the court, and they've yet to prove it. So if you're Kevin Durant, Clay, would you take that kind of risk on the roster that the Knicks have? 17 wins, knowing you're going to miss all of next season? You know, a lot of these guys, they don't want to take that leap of faith. And to be fair, when you think about what the Knicks have done over the last 18 years, all the losing, all the dysfunction, how can you blame them?
And on top of the Knicks potentially missing on Durant and Kyrie Irving, the news last night, and I saw this and I just kind of raised my eyebrows, the offshore markets are not always a perfect predictor of what people decide to do, right? People can be buying the rumor. They can be wrong. There can be things spreading that are not true. But the out of nowhere, the Brooklyn Nets suddenly went to minus 300 to sign Kevin Durant. So in addition to the Knicks missing on Durant, it's possible now that Brooklyn might get him and Kyrie Irving. I mean, it's not just that the Knicks don't sign top free agents. It's that they're still coming to the same city and going to what had always been, what, the little brother, to describe it at best, of the Knicks franchise in Brooklyn?
Yeah, and remember, too, in those last 18 years, the Nets have been to two NBA finals, while the Knicks have had one playoff series victory.
Right.
No, it's
very Clippers and Lakers-esque, honestly, in the last decade, basically.
Absolutely. And it really would be a public relations disaster if that were to happen. That, I mean, if we were sitting around at the beginning of the year and we said, guess what? At the end of the year, both Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant are going to leave their teams and they're both coming to play together in New York, I think you would have put down a lot of money that it was going to be the New York Knicks. I think I would have done the same. But to the Nets' credit, you know, they have tried to create a culture there. They did. They were a playoff team this year, which I think certainly helped them. And I also think a couple of things. They're going to have a their minority owner, or their majority owner is going to be Joe Tsai, who's the gentleman that owns Alibaba, you know, one of the biggest companies in China. So I think for a lot of the players, a lot of the marketing endorsement opportunities in China will be there. Go ask Tracy McGrady and some of the some of the guys that played with Yao Ming. Steve Francis, the same thing. They're still making money from being connected with Yao Ming with the Houston Rockets. And also, as you know, Martin O'Malley is the Nets team doctor. He performed the surgery.
Yeah, that's a big clue,
Durant,
I think.
When he had the foot injury, the Jones fracture a few years back with Oklahoma City, and, of course, the ruptured Achilles. So if you're Durant, if you're being smart, you should go to a place where you're confident in the medical staff, and I would think you would have some confidence in what goes on in Brooklyn.
Yeah, it would. I mean, the decision to travel to New York and have the surgery on the Achilles tendon and then for this guy to be the Brooklyn Nets team physician, it's not as if he can't travel and meet with any physician that he wants. But having that guy there to monitor your recovery and having an incredibly good relationship with the training staff, I think that has to factor in substantially in his decision. And then, like you said, this Nets team was a playoff team, and there's a lot of playoff games, so I think I'm correct in this. They lost in seven games, didn't they, or was it six? I can't remember exactly, to the 76ers.
No,
I think
it ended up being five. But they
Oh, did
they
it five? Okay, they won game one, right? Is that what they did in that series? They won game one, and then they lost the rest. But they were competitive in that series, right? I mean, this was a team that didn't just make the postseason. They contended in many ways. If it were only five games, that's a function of the fact that they lost a lot of close games down the stretch. They had a chance to win that series.
Yeah, and I think absolutely. And you know, Kenny Atkinson has been a very good coach, and he's done very well for point guards. Guys like Jeremy Lin, when he played for the New York Knicks, that's when Kenny Atkinson was a Nick assistant coach, and Jeremy Lin had one of his best years. And you think about the way D'Angelo Russell played this year with the Brooklyn Nets. So, you know, I think, you know, point guards look at Kenny Atkinson as a guy that could help them. And obviously Durant, he should be more worried about his rehab and how he's going to get back. But the Brooklyn Nets have a lot of things going for them. Everybody now, you know, Brooklyn is considered this, this hip place, and they have the beautiful practice facility. You get to play in New York, but you don't have to kind of put up with a lot of the nonsense that goes on with the Knicks. And to be fair, you know, I think, you know, this is the one thing that Jim Dolan, you know, especially in the front office, need to look at. Instead of blaming the media all the time for all your issues, when are the Knicks finally going to look in the mirror and say, you know what, maybe we need to change the way that we do things? And I still say, even, you know, it was funny, last night I spoke to Charles Oakley after he tweeted out a photo of himself and Kevin Durant. You know, Charles Oakley, regardless of how you feel about him, was a beloved player here with the Knicks. You know, a guy that gave it, you know, blood, sweat, and tears. You'd always see him diving on the court after loose balls. You know, the last time we saw him on the court at Madison Square Garden, he was being tackled and dragged out of the place. You know, like, if you're the Knicks, like, why would Jim Dolan think that that's, like, a good image? And then the next day you go on radio and you're calling the guy an alcoholic. Like, you know, even if you think you're 100% right in that situation, why would you do that? Like, none of that is going to help the overall kind of brand and help the perception of you and help the perception of the team. I think at some point the Knicks, as opposed to blaming the media all the time, you know, start looking at what you're doing wrong.
Yeah, you know, it's also intriguing. Let's say that this ends up happening and Kyrie and Kevin Durant go to Brooklyn. And let's say also that Kawhi decides to go to the Clippers. This would be an interesting move taking place simultaneously on both coasts that would, to me, stamp once more the players in the NBA as bigger brands than the franchises, right? Can you imagine that 15 years ago we would have ever said, or 20 years ago, oh, that guy's going to turn down Madison Square Garden and the Knicks, and the other guy's going to turn down Showtime and the Lakers, and they're going to go to the same city, basically, and Kawhi Leonard's going to decide, you know what, I'd prefer to play for the Clippers, and Kyrie Irving's going to say, alongside of Kevin Durant, you know what, I'd prefer to play for Brooklyn. It's evidence, I think, of the power of the individual in the NBA. And I don't think it's just the NBA, right? I think this has happened in lots of different facets of the world of sports. College football, which I love, for instance, I think the coach matters more than the program there. If you got Nick Saban going anywhere, college baseball, you got Tim Corbin who just won a championship, and Vanderbilt baseball basically didn't exist. The coach matters more than the program. I don't think there's any doubt in the NBA that the player matters more than the team.
Well, and think about it, too. Look at a guy like Russell Westbrook. I mean, Russell Westbrook plays in Oklahoma City, but crying out loud. I don't like the way that he handled himself during the playoffs. I thought he was a pain in the neck, and I know people can have issues with the way that he plays. But just in terms of the brand that he is, think about how big he is. He plays in the smallest market. It's like he's a nobody out there. And I think even a guy like Giannis Antetokounmpo playing in Milwaukee, everyone kind of knows who he is. It's become a much smaller world when it comes to stuff like this. And I've always said this about New York players, too. If you play in New York, like Derek Jeter was as big of a star as we've had here in the last 50 years. And it's not like you drive down the highway and there would be billboards of Derek Jeter all over the place. So even when you come here, you're still competing. Again, we have two of everything. I mean, usually we stink in everything, but we do have two of everything. Football, baseball, basketball. We got three hockey teams, for crying out loud. So there's even like a lot of competition just from that standpoint. So I do think you're right. In the NBA, the player is bigger than the team a lot of times. I also think that's hurt the league a little bit. I know you were kind of harping on the ratings during the NBA finals, and I think that has a lot to do with it. Too, that the NBA sells stars, so when a guy like LeBron doesn't make it, people are like, well, why should I be watching? Your biggest star didn't make it.
No, I don't think there's any doubt. All right, let's go into soccer for a minute. I don't know if you guys talked about this on Around the Horn very much, but Megan Rapinoe saying, I'm not effing going to the White House. One, obviously looking ahead in the event that the World Cup ends up happening for the U.S. women and they win the championship. Now, Donald Trump, and we'll talk about this some an hour too, responded to her yesterday on Twitter and still invited the Women's World Cup team to the White House regardless. What did you think when you saw Megan Rapinoe come out and decide to say these things?
Yeah, because that video, I think, was
it's an older video, but it went public, I guess, a couple days.
Absolutely. And I think the whole thing to me looked like a setup, even from her. It kind of looked like she knew. Like, to me, I think she needed to be smarter there. Like, why would you go down that road at that time, regardless of when the video was shot, even in January? I mean, first of all, who's to say at that time you'd even be on the team? Like, she's had injuries in the past. We said, God forbid she could have gotten hurt at some point leading up to the World Cup. So it's almost like I think she knew that the question was going to come. The way that she answered it, she knew. She's saying that knowing that that's going to have an impact. She knows that that's going to get released. And if I'm Jill Ellis, I'd be a little ticked off because I think the way that the Americans have handled themselves over there, going back to that Thailand game, that was not a good look for them. And then even against Spain, I think a lot of people look at them as catching a break, especially on that second goal. And now you're going up to play France in Paris. Like, I don't know, like, why I would want that out there. Like, if I'm France, I'm thinking, wait, so their players already going around talking about winning and whether or not they're going to go visit the president at the White House. This is where their focus is on. If I were Jill Ellis, I would not be happy about it because I think it's like it's the wrong tone to kind of set going into a match. And when there's media availability, this is now going to become the big thing because I know a lot of her players the teammates are rallying around her, showing support. It's not the right way to go into a match.
Especially not a challenging match when you're on the road going up against France in what is probably, for many people, considered the default title game, right? And you've got all the French fans, you got all the attention that's coming in. I can't imagine this is something that the U.S. women's team wants to react to. And frankly, they didn't play well in their game on Monday against Spain. They were very fortunate to win that one.
No, you're right. And, Spain was very physical against them. And you could tell that it got to the U.S. team. I said this about what happened against Thailand. With the celebrating at goals 10, 11, 12, and 13. There's no way that all 23, 24 players and everyone on that coaching staff thinks it was the greatest thing that they did. Now, I don't think anybody is going to come out publicly and say that because you don't want to, put yourself in that position, especially maybe like a player that's more of a fringe player. And I think it's the same thing here with Megan Rapinoe, even regardless of maybe how the person might feel politically. It's just like it's not worth saying. It's almost like you're trying to draw attention to yourself, which is one thing, but why are you even talking about it in January, whatever it was, and now here it's coming out? Like, the fact that it's coming out now, in theory, might not be your fault, but it is your fault because you're the one that brought it up. Why are we talking about where we might go? I don't want to go cursing about going there. And then I thought it kind of looked bad because I thought the president did a smart thing. Yeah, win or lose, we want you guys here.
Yeah, I the president. We'll talk about that later in the show. We haven't mentioned it yet, but I'll talk about the president's response to Megan Rapinoe. Good stuff as always, Frank Isola, at the Frank Isola. Watch him on ESPN. Listen to him on SiriusXM. Read him at The Athletic. Good stuff, my man.
Hey, Vandy got you a championship. I'm happy for you.
Yeah, they did. Big time win last night for the Doors. Okay, diving in on the Trump story with Rapinoe and also a cobra and a grandma. What happened there? This is OutKick.
Be sure to catch live editions of OutKick, the coverage with Clay Travis, weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific.
Welcome back, Geico, OutKick Studios. We're talking about a couple of different stories. I want to bring in the crew now. Danny G, if the Knicks don't just miss out on Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving, but they both go to Brooklyn instead, this has to be one of the most devastating blows to a storied pro franchise that we could ever really imagine. It's not just that the Knicks would be missing. It's that another team in the same market would be grabbing what the Knicks are missing.
Yeah, talk about long suffering. Almost feel bad for Knicks fans. They had a glimmer of light, too, when R.J. Barrett was drafted, because you saw what happened in Brooklyn at the draft when RJ was announced and he was walking with family and the crowd was going crazy. And, you know, these are the same fans that booed
Kristaps Porzingis. Yes.
So the fact that they embraced RJ Barrett, it seemed like their offseason was off to a brilliant start. And now if this is all true, it's going to be kind of devastating.
They have gone. I mean, this is the Knicks' perspective. They have gone from, as fans, expecting, hey, we might get Zion and pair him with Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving. That was probably the best-case scenario for Knicks fans in the wake of the Porzingis trade. That's what was being sold to them. Hey, we're going to get Zion, then we're going to draft Durant, then we're going to draft Kyrie Irving. Now, instead, they may get DeMarcus Cousins coming off of a torn, I think, Achilles tendon and a quadricep injury that left him, frankly, I mean, playing like a shell of himself in the NBA Finals, and they're now potentially going to give him a lot of money instead. That's pretty devastating to Knicks fans relative to what they were anticipating. As big of a swing and a miss as you can possibly get, essentially, that is really, really tough to have handle. Can you imagine, Dub, this scenario if they go from, hey, Knicks fans, you're going to get Zion, Durant, and Kyrie Irving. Instead, oh, by the way, here's DeMarcus Cousins.
I mean, yeah, to be a Knicks fan would be not a fun existence. And another thing, you think back 6 or 7 years ago, whenever it was, when the Boston Celtics absolutely fleeced the Brooklyn Nets in the trade that sent Paul Pierce and Kevin Garnett there, we thought the Nets were done for a long, long time. And look at the Nets now, and look at the Knicks now. The Nets are in a much better situation just, you know, 5 or 6 years later, and the Knicks are right back where the Knicks usually are.
Not only that, I mean, the Nets could find themselves in as good or a better situation than the Boston Celtics after a trade, like you mentioned, that everybody thought, man, the Nets are done. They're never going to be able to recover from overpaying for all these guys in their 30s who quickly were unable to come together and make a go of it. And then if they get Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant and pair that with all the talent they already had that allowed them to make the postseason, and again, they were competitive in their series against the 76ers, even though they weren't able to end up winning that series. They won game one on the road. They lost, if I remember correctly, a couple of games in the postseason, in the overtime. So you start to break that down. I mean, you have to be pretty excited about Brooklyn, not necessarily for the year upcoming, because Durant's going to miss that entire year. But for the year after that, they could be legitimate title contenders. And again, the offshore markets have now made Kevin Durant a prohibitive favorite to go to the Brooklyn Nets. Assuming they know something, that's a wild move to see him minus 300 favored to go to Brooklyn. When we come back, president responds to Megan Rapinoe and one of the greatest Animal Thunderdomes ever. This is OutKick on Fox Sports Radio.
This is OutKick, the coverage with Clay Travis.
Live from the Geico OutKick studios, 300-plus stations nationwide, Sirius channel 218, XM channel 202. Also, the streaming Fox Sports Radio app, as well as the iHeartRadio app. Lots of different places you can hear us. Appreciate all of you wherever you are listening. I know a lot of you as well on the podcast. I want to tell you, if you haven't already signed up, our Wins and Losses podcast is going pretty phenomenally well. Paul Feinbaum is the guest this week, and I'd encourage you guys to get out there and listen if you haven't already. Five different guests, all long-form conversations with me. The only place you can get them is through podcast. Again, you can just search my name out at Clay Travis on the iTunes store. But we have talked with Jason Whitlock. I know a lot of you are fans of Jason Whitlock. He is on Speak for Yourself now. He's been on this show a lot over the years. He has been phenomenal to listen to in that interview. I think you guys will enjoy it. We talked with Shannon Terry, who is the only person I'm aware of who has sold two different media companies for over $100 million each. We talked with SEC Commissioner Greg Sankey, Washington State men's football coach Mike Leach, and most recently from ESPN and the SEC Network, Paul Feinbaum. I'm telling you, search him out. If you got long drives ahead of you, if a lot of you are listening to this podcast right now, you already signed up for that. You need to be signed up for the Wins and Losses podcast as well. Speaking of wins, last night Vanderbilt gets a second national championship under Tim Corbin. Pretty extraordinary accomplishment. The stat that to me epitomizes what Tim Corbin has been able to do: prior to Tim Corbin at Vanderbilt, the university had had three trips to the College World Series. Sorry, to the NCAA tournament, not the College World Series. Three trips to the NCAA tournament for baseball ever. He's now won two national championships there, and he has been to 15 NCAA tournaments. So the whole history of the program has just three NCAA tournament trips prior to Tim Corbin. He's now been 15 times and won two national championships. He almost has as many national championships at Vanderbilt as the school had NCAA tournament appearances in the entire history of the program before he got there. Just an extraordinary accomplishment there. Last night, flipping around, watching a lot of different activities, saw as well, in addition to Vanderbilt beating Michigan, Josie Altidore with an incredible bicycle kick goal to beat Panama in the Gold Cup. U.S. wins that game 1-0. I watched some of the Democratic presidential debate last night, part one of two. And Donald Trump was tweeting a little bit about that. But as soon as we got off the air yesterday morning, the Donald Trump weighed in on audio that we were playing for you yesterday that came out. Let me go ahead and play that for you again. On the eve of the United States now playing France, I'm not sure what time they have a media availability today in France. It's obviously 6 hours, I believe, ahead of the East Coast in Paris. So it is approaching what? It's approaching one, noon or 1 o'clock, I guess, in Paris. So I'm not sure what the U.S. is going to do in terms of media availabilities today, because I haven't seen them respond to this at all. But yesterday, a video of Megan Rapinoe criticizing the president went viral. This is what it sounded like.
Are you excited about going to the White House?
I'm not going to the White House. No, I'm not going to the White House.
So Megan Rapinoe says she's not going to the White House. She also said, I don't anticipate that we will get offered an opportunity to go to the White House. So the president of the United States, Donald Trump, decides to fire back at Megan Rapinoe and tweets as follows. Women's soccer player Megan Rapinoe just stated she is, quote, not going to the effing White House if we win. And then Trump takes a shot at the NBA for changing the term owner. But he finishes off by saying, I am a big fan of the American team and women's soccer, but Megan should win first before she talks. Finish the job. We haven't yet invited Megan or the team, but I am now inviting the team, in all caps, win or lose. Megan should never disrespect our country, the White House, or our flag, especially since so much has been done for her and the team. Be proud of the flag that you wear. The USA is doing great. So I actually think this is a big win for the president. He made Megan Rapinoe look ridiculous in my mind. Now, I broke this down for you yesterday. We should say that when exactly this video was recorded We're not exactly sure, but it only went out on social media in the last 36 or 48 hours. So whenever it was recorded, either clearly the media member knew what they had, and it seems to me was waiting until there was they knew they would get the biggest audience to actually put this out. But Megan Rapinoe, who's a team captain, needs to be smarter than to answer a question like this regardless. And the fact that this video is now out and went viral, I think the president actually responded in a pretty, you know, magnanimous way, considering this president, right? He didn't rip Megan Rapinoe. He said, look, I mean, I'm inviting the U.S. women's team to the White House, win or lose. I'm a fan of them. And if you wonder what he's talking about with the national anthem, Megan Rapinoe took a knee during the national anthem, making the U.S. Soccer Federation change their rules and mandate that all players stand for the national anthem. But Megan Rapinoe refuses to put her hand over her heart or sing along with the national anthem. That's now her way to protest the national anthem. But I think she made. I think the president made Megan Rapinoe look bad here, because she's out there ripping the White House. She dropped an F-bomb in her answer, and she said also, you know, we're not going to get invited to this thing anyway. And boom, the president actually, I thought, behaved in a pretty magnanimous fashion and invites the women's soccer team to the White House, win or lose. Now, they may say no, but he puts the onus on them. And to me, that's what the president should do. He should be the bigger person. They want to take shots at him. They don't like him. Okay, I understand that. You still represent the country. I'm a fan of the team, and I'm still going to invite you guys to the White House and put the onus on you and say, let you guys tell me you don't want to come. And by the way, they all went to the White House in 2015 when they won the Women's World Cup and met the president then. So I think this is actually a big win for Donald Trump in terms of this response. So to me, this is a solid move by Trump, I would say. Now, there has been one tweet sent out when yesterday. Ali Krieger said, in regards to the president's tweet, I know women who you cannot control or grope anger you, but I stand by Megan Rapinoe and will sit this one out as well. I don't support blah, blah, blah. All right. So I think this makes the players look bad. I really do. And I think it makes Megan Rapinoe look bad. I think it's a poor decision on her part as the captain. And unfortunately, I think a lot of people out there, it makes them not like the U.S. women's team. I mean, we live in such a polarized political climate that if you decide that you want to get political, you're basically alienating half of the country. And I think it's different for a player. I still think it's a bad move, right? I wrote a book called Republicans Buy Sneakers Too. If I were an athlete and I was trying to appeal to everyone, I wouldn't be political, right? I think Michael Jordan had it right. And I think there's a reason why Michael Jordan is still the most beloved player of all time, why the NBA ratings have never approached Michael Jordan at his apex, because Michael Jordan might well be the most beloved athlete in the history of our country. And I think that's because he tried to appeal to everyone with his excellence, as opposed to trying to divide people by telling them that they're idiots for believing one thing or the other if it's different than what he believed. But I think particularly for a women's soccer team that is not playing very well right now, that is going to have to really struggle to get past France, I think it's going to be a knockdown, drag-out fight on Friday. And for the U.S. women to decide to get political in the middle of this process is, I think, a bad look. Not to mention they're arguing that they deserve more money. And how do you get more money? Well, you appeal to more people. I just think this is a bad look. I'm going to open up phone lines, 877-996-6369. What do you guys think out there? And I'm sure Donald Trump will get criticized for responding in any way, because no matter what he does, he gets criticized. But this is actually what most sports media would have requested that he do. He said he's a fan of a team, even if they don't like him. He invited them to the White House, even if they don't win a championship. And he pointed out something that I think is true, which is maybe instead of worrying about getting a White House invite, you should worry about winning the World Cup first. to me, this is about as coherent and as good of a response as Donald Trump has had to anybody that attacks him. Danny G, what do you think?
I don't know. I feel like a lot of the country yesterday when I started seeing a lot of these stories pop up all over the internet where I rolled my eyes a little bit and I'm like, God, could we just leave it to soccer? Why did Rapinoe
well,
have to open her mouth?
Especially, yeah, because this is one of the most liked teams, I would say, in general, in all of America, right? That's my point in general. Rapinoe, in my opinion, win the World Cup, and then if you get the invite to the White House and you want to make a political statement, make it then, because your soccer career is probably over, right? What is she, 32 years old? It's unlikely that she, I would bet, that she is going to be a 36-year-old player on the U.S. women's team in 2025, I think, whatever, 2023, whatever the math is. I can't do math. 2023, I guess, would be the next Women's World Cup, right? So make your statements after you actually win the World Cup instead of now if they lose, this is going to be a huge story. It's going to be, oh, the U.S. women couldn't focus. They went over to France, and they decided that they had to make political statements instead of winning the World Cup.
Yeah, and she claims to know all about Trump, and obviously she's kind of a rival. Well, if you know anything about the Donald, you know he loves stuff like this.
Yes.
So, of course, he was going to eat this up and then tweet all this out and invite them either way. So she stuck her foot in her mouth. She should have known what was going to come next after this 8x8 guy put this story out. The reporter obviously baited her and got what he wanted, and now this is taking focus off of what we should be focusing on, which is the actual play on the field.
Yeah, look, and she may have thought that the president would overreact and say, oh, I hate the U.S. women's soccer team, you know, like he's responded to other critics, but he actually did the exact opposite. He said, I'm a fan, even if they, you know, basically even if they hate me and are ripping me, and said, I invite, you know, like them to come to the White House, win or lose. But again, you probably should focus on winning as opposed to worrying about me. I mean, that seems like a totally rational response. Dub, president gets ripped all the time for what he tweets. Like here, I think he actually seems like the better person. Is Dub dead? He's fielding calls. Sorry, must, we got loaded lines. I bet I forgot that I told him to field the calls. What about you, Eddie? Eddie made a good point yesterday. Really, really good point, I thought. Because we were talking about, you know, potential White House invites. And Eddie said, you know what? It's 50 years after Richard Nixon. People want to point to Richard Nixon and say, only president to ever leave office in disgrace. If you shook hands with Richard Nixon 50 years ago, it's not like people are like, oh my God, how in the world did you lend your brand to Richard Nixon? Aren't you ashamed that you ever met Richard Nixon and went to the White House? Nobody would say that. Everybody would say what you did, Eddie, which is, oh, you met Nixon? What was he like? What was it like being in the White House? 50 years from now, this idea that people are going to be like, oh my God, you're on the wrong side of history. You didn't shake Donald Trump's hand. That's ludicrous. If 50 years ago, if anything, kids are going to be like, my God, what was it like living during the Donald Trump administration? You got to meet him. What was he like? I mean, right? I mean, that's the way people are going to respond.
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt about it. Whether you dislike him or not, he is interesting, polarizing, as you've said. So yeah, meeting him in you know, looking through the lens of time, at some point it's going to be I would think would be an interesting story. But you know, you talk about this women's team, generally speaking, in the past they have been popular and easy to root for, but starting with, you know, the blowout win and then the excessive celebration and then the golf clap response and now this, I don't know that I find this team to be very likable.
I'm with you.
And frankly, if they lose to France, I'm not going to be happy about it, but I'm not going to be heartbroken either, to be honest about it.
I think you're right. I think, you know, that they have what they had in 2015, and I took my kids and we went and watched them play. They were one of the most beloved teams that I can remember in recent history in America. They didn't, other than Hope Solo, who obviously has all of her off-the-field related shenanigans and her outspokenness in general in terms of some of the things that she has said over the years. Other than her, they didn't have anybody who was polarizing in any way. They had a, you know, sort of buoyant, effervescent quality that made them very likable. And I don't have that sense now. I don't have that sense as we get ready for the game against France in 2019. I think there are a lot of people out there listening to us right now that if we lost to France, they'd be like, eh, that's fine. Doesn't really bother me, you know? And it's stunning to me that that would happen because I saw all the enthusiasm that happened in 2015. And I don't know. I mean, I just feel like Donald Trump, amazingly, seems more likable than Megan Rapinoe and the women's soccer team. And
I will say one thing, though, about what Trump tweeted out. Don't invite him to the White House if they don't win. Isn't that the point? I mean, it's supposed to be a special honor for people
I thought it was even more magnanimous by him, though. Now, it would be funny if he had said, I'd love to have you in the White House, but we only honor champions at the White House, right. Not losers.
That's right.
Like, we're
finish
not going to give
deal
you a participation
and I'll see
you, trophy.
I'll see you at the White House.
But I thought this was Trump actually trying to be as friendly and accommodating as he could be. Of all the tweets that Trump has sent in response to people who have said bad things about him, I can't remember one that is less attacking than the one he sent out about Megan Rapinoe. Right? I mean, when you rip Donald Trump, and Megan Rapinoe has been ripping Donald Trump ever since he got elected, this one obviously gets more attention because all of the focus is on the U.S. women right now, but she's ripped him for years, and he's never responded to her, may not have had any clue who she was, but I think this is a pretty magnanimous response from the president. Again, 877-996-6369. We will go to your calls. Dub, what's the situation on the calls? Are you back with us?
I'm back. Callers are calling, and we got a few lined up, ready to go.
Should we take them now? Well, you know what? Let's go to break. Callers, stick with us. We'll load up all the lines. We will go to you guys and let you guys respond. But first, Dub, what do you think? Like, the president was actually fairly restrained in the way he responded to Megan Rapinoe. I don't know if you could hear us while you were fielding all the calls. What was your reaction when you saw the tweet?
Well, for Donald Trump, it was maybe the most restrained tweet I've ever seen out of him when it comes to a situation like this. And I agree. I mean, I think it makes Megan Rapinoe not look so great. And I think there's going to be a lot of Americans who won't really mind if they do end up losing to France, which is an odd thing to say, especially, you know, if you would have said that leading up to the World Cup.
Yeah, I agree with you. All right, we'll take your calls. Everybody can weigh in at Clay Travis on Twitter if you want to weigh in there on OutKick.
This is OutKick the Coverage with Clay Travis.
Welcome back, Geico OutKick Studios. Lots of you want to weigh in on Megan Rapinoe's comments as the U.S. women get prepared to play against France on Friday. The story 100% moving from can the U.S. women win the World Cup to their feud with the President of the United States. Donald Trump responded yesterday morning and says, he's a fan of the U.S. women. He thinks that Megan Rapinoe should be focused on trying to win the World Cup as opposed to worrying about a White House visit. But he says that the White House is going to invite the U.S. women to come regardless of the outcome in the Women's World Cup because he is a fan of the team. Phone lines open. Dub, let's roll through.
All right, we got Jim in Pennsylvania.
Jim, what's up?
Hey, Clay, good morning. I got a couple points. First of all, I'm not a huge fan of our president typically, but credit has to go where credit's due. He couldn't have handled this any better than he did. So, you know, props to him for that. But I've got a bigger concern with Rapinoe in this regard. You know, Kaepernick took a knee and represented himself and a private organization. Rapinoe stands only because she's mandated to. If given a choice, she would take a knee. Her uniform says United States of America on it. And I got a real problem with her having a captaincy. And follow me along with me if you can for a minute. Forget about the World Cup. Let's assume this was the Olympics. To the best of my knowledge, soccer is an Olympic sport. And when a team, an Olympic team sport, wins a medal and goes on the platform, it's the captains that go on there. And if she wanted to be the ultimate martyr to end her career, imagine our flag is playing, they win a gold medal, and she decides to take a knee in that moment. I can't see how she could be a captain under the circumstances. So.
Yeah, look, I mean, I think that's a really smart call. And we talked about this yesterday. I think there's a distinction between representing a private organization in some way, as Colin Kaepernick did, and being paid effectively by all of us to be a member of the U.S. national team and choosing to disrespect the flag then. I mean, look, let's just put it this way. Is any other athlete in any other country in World Cup history taking knees or denigrating their national anthem when it plays before their games? Not that I've ever seen. And there are a lot of countries competing in the World Cup that have a pinprick of the freedoms that we do in America. So I think that's well said. Who's up next, Dub?
We got Jose in Fremont.
Jose, what's up?
What's up, brother? Hey, check this out, man. I'm definitely proud of how Trump replied. I mean, considering his history of the way he replies to things. But I definitely, you know what, I am a proud American. Don't get me wrong, but I actually at this point would like to see them lose because, man, you're representing the country, especially in a time that we might be going to war with another country, and you're going to do this, and you want to have the women's soccer team get more equality and respect, but you're going to do something like this, and it's where? Come on, man. You got to get together. You represent the U.S. No matter what, no matter who's in the house, you got to rep.
Thanks. I think there are a lot of people out there that feel that way about, you know, you want to be able to cheer for the U.S. women, but as Eddie said, you know, they start off their run by scoring 13 goals and celebrating. Then they denigrate, you know, the president. I mean, that's not a great run that they're on right now in the World Cup, I don't think, in terms of adding fans. Who's up next?
Steven in Atlanta.
Let's go down to the ATL. What's up?
Hey, yeah. I'm one of those fans who, since she has said this, I'm rooting against them now, and I hope they lose because I want to see the response that Donald Trump has on his Twitter feed when they do lose because, you know, it's just so un-American the way a lot of these athletes represent our country. And I just think of all the other countries who look at us on this grand stage and they're like, wow, look at all these athletes and these Americans who are against the country that they live in, you know. So I hope they lose. I really want them to lose.
Yeah, thanks for the call. I think there's two ways to look at it. I think you can say, man, it's disgraceful that you would behave this way in a country that has given you all these opportunities. The other way to look at it is we are so free here that even our multimillionaire athletes have the freedom to denigrate the country that has made them multimillionaire athletes. Look, the big story that nobody talks about in the Women's World Cup is our women are so good relative to much of the rest of the world because our women are so free relative to much of the rest of the world. Many countries, Saudi Arabia, just in the last couple of years, let women drive cars. Do you think they're going to be good at playing soccer? Of course not. Iran, I think the rule is still, somebody looked this up to confirm it. Iran would not let women come watch their World Cup matches. They would not let women go into a stadium and stand and watch games. They may have recently changed that to allow women to come watch games, but for the vast majority of the history of Iran, all soccer games and soccer matches in their country were only male. Think about that for a minute. The entire stadium, the country prohibited women from even going and watching the national team play. Okay, they just changed that in October of 2018. Do you think their women's soccer team in Iran is going to be any good when they don't even let women go watch the men play until October of 2018? Until 8 months ago, they didn't even let women watch games in their country. Our country is so free that a woman can rip the president of the United States and basically extend her middle finger in his direction. You imagine the reaction in the vast majority of the world if a prominent athlete basically middle fingered the president of their country? Think they would still be representing that country? There's no way. Many people in this country completely take for granted our freedoms because, for one thing, they have no idea how unique those freedoms are because, frankly, our education system is failing in many ways. But I think Megan Rapinoe's response in many ways reflects that ignorance, honestly. If you're Megan Rapinoe and you care a great deal about women's rights, wouldn't you want to use your platform to shine a light on the lack of women's rights that exists in the rest of the world instead of insulting the president? I would. Who's up next?
We got Jay in South Carolina.
Jay, what's up?
In that country, there's no way.
I love hearing my own voice on the radio several seconds after I actually said it. But Jay, what's up? Is Jay gone or is he still there? Yeah.
Because, frankly,
all right. So here's the deal. if you are waiting to talk, turn your radio down. How long have people been saying this? For 100 years of radio?
Since the 1950s.
There is a delay. Yeah, there is a delay, all right, on the real radio versus me. There's like, what is the delay? 40 seconds, Danny G?
Yeah, correct.
In the event that people say something crazy and we have to drop it so we don't lose our FCC license, I am 40 seconds ahead. So what Jay is going to do right now, Jay is trying to respond to my questions, but it's too late. Who's up next, Dub?
We got Ricky in Augusta, Georgia.
Ricky, what's up?
Hey, good morning, Clay.
Appreciate it. What you got?
Hey, yeah, just a response to that soccer team stuff. And my thought on that is, I'm sick and tired of all these politically correct people and stuff. And just another, regardless of whether you like the president or not, he's the president of the United States. You disrespect your country. You disrespect your flag. And it's really starting to get to be really annoying that for all these athletes and even the actors, the Hollywood. But like I said, we are still all Americans. This is our country. And if you want to go somewhere else and live, that's fine. But, and, you know, and I heard a thing on Charles Barkley said a couple of days ago, you know, when he was playing basketball and we got all these people playing these sports and he was playing as kids, playing as fun, and we paying you millions and millions of dollars just to play a game that you used to play as a kid, and you still have all these aspects of this country and this, that, and the other, but you're really making it look bad for the United States when you do stuff like that. I was actually in Washington, D.C. a couple of weeks, this weekend.
Yeah.
And got to see Air Force One, where the Air Force put the helicopter to bring the president home when I was in Washington, D.C., they dropped him off, and they took off and went where they went.
Yeah,
but you got to love this country. I mean, regardless of the history of it and everything else, it's still we are the United States of America.
Thank you. Thank you. Look, we're not perfect, but we're better than any country has ever been in the history of the world, and that's not hyperbole. We are not perfect, but we are better than any country has been in the history of the world. And I said yesterday, and I still think this is true. I think it would be helpful in the United States if we had some sort of international service program. And everybody in the United States had to go live in a third world country for a year before they could start college. They had to travel around in other parts of the world and see how people live. I think a lot of you out there right now listening, you're like blown away by that fact that I told you earlier about Iran. Iran did not let women watch sporting events in its country until October of 2018. One reason why our women's soccer team is so much better than our men's soccer team relative to the rest of the world, the primary reason is because our women have freedoms that the women in the rest of the world don't have. I would find it far more powerful, instead of going after Donald Trump, if Megan Rapinoe used her platform to actually bring and shed light on situations like those. I mean, that's crazy, right? I mean, most of the issues of unfairness and fundamental injustice that exist now in this world aren't taking place in the United States. We are a beacon of liberty compared to most of the rest of the world. Not saying we're perfect, but if you want to shine your platform and use your platform as a member of the U.S. national team, why not use it to advance American values and try to spread our values to other parts of the world? Instead of attacking the president while you're wearing the U.S. women's national team jersey. And I do think there's a difference between what Colin Kaepernick did, which I didn't agree with, and what Megan Rapinoe is doing. I think Megan Rapinoe is much worse because she's representing the U.S. soccer team. She's not representing a random pro sports franchise when she makes the decisions that she's making. And right now she's also overseas representing us, which I think is an even higher level of importance. Who's up next?
All right, last one here. We got Mike in Sherman Oaks.
Mike, what's up?
Hey Clay. You know, you make a great point about how ignorant most people in the United States are. I think every junior high student should go see a citizenship swearing-in ceremony that the people being given the privilege of being a citizen, like at the L.A.
Yeah, no, it's a great point. It is incredible to see. I mean, look, you can agree or disagree with all the mess that's going on with immigration in this country right now, but most people in the world consider it so desirable to merely have their feet on American soil that they are willing to risk their lives to try to get here, right? And if you see those citizenship swearing-in ceremonies, people from all over the world who have done everything they can, and for many of them, i.e. even most of them, the becoming an American citizen is the proudest moment of their lives, and that's because they understand the rights, responsibilities, and great freedoms that we have relative to what they've had in the past in other countries. And I don't think most people born in America today get that. I mean, I think it was a really good point. Perspective matters in all things in life. And it's hard sometimes to keep the appropriate measure of perspective because we live in sort of a frenzied time where there's always these new distractions, where there's always so many things that you have to take care of. A lot of you are driving into work this morning and you got a billion things on your checklist. And just pausing for a moment and thinking about how fortunate we all are, if you are listening in one of the 50 states or somewhere in the world and you are an American citizen, you won the lottery when you were born an American. Or you won the lottery, sometimes literally, if you are fortunate enough to be an immigrant and have become a citizen of this country. Throughout the history of mankind, being born in America today, regardless of who your parents are and regardless of what your current circumstances are at birth, you are more fortunate than 99.99% of people who have ever been born. And I think many of us don't realize that because we take for granted so much in this country on a day-to-day basis. I think Megan Rapinoe did it, and I think it reflects poorly on her. I think Donald Trump actually responded in a somewhat presidential fashion. Certainly, maybe the most presidential fashion that he's responded to any sports crisis so far. Okay, this is Outkick. When we come back, incredible Cobra and Grandma story in the Animal Thunderdome next on Outkick.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
Welcome back, Geico Outkick Studios. Got a couple of interesting tweets rolling in. Want to hit a couple of these. We were talking, and we'll get to Animal Thunderdome at the top of hour three. Those stories there are really good, so I think you guys are going to love it. But Payam writes in, I'm Iranian. We're talking about the fact that Iran just in October allowed women to attend soccer games in its country. Talking about the freedoms that our people have, and in particular our women have, since the Women's World Cup is going on. In Iran, they just allowed women to go to games. The women's national team in Iran has to play in pants and wear a hijab on their head with only their eyes showing. It's truly a human rights disgrace. And then he attaches a picture of the Iranian national team and the outfits they have to wear in order to play. Is it any surprise that our women, who are completely bathing in freedoms compared to everyone else in the world, would be able to dominate the rest of the world? And I said this earlier. If you look at the Women's World Cup and you look at virtually every game that was played, you don't need to know anything other than in which country do women have more freedoms, and you can predict the outcome in every single game. Think about that for a minute. The reason why our women are so dominant is because they have freedoms that most of the women in the rest of the world don't have. And if you looked at virtually every Women's World Cup game that's been played so far this year in this tournament, all you had to do without knowing a single player is look at the overall freedom of women in those countries, and you could have predicted every outcome in the game. Why? Because the more freedom you have, the better you're going to be at sports. As a general rule, particularly in women's sports, freedom means women can pursue their sporting accomplishments and achievements just like men can. And so if the thing that is upsetting to me about Megan Rapinoe deciding to attack half of the country by going after the president as the women's team tries to pursue a World Cup championship is she has her platform right now. Wouldn't you rather hear her point something like that out? Wouldn't, if you are this huge social justice warrior, shouldn't you be less concerned about America, where our freedoms are unparalleled, where you can turn and give the middle finger to the president of the United States and nothing happens to you, when if you do that in much of the world, certainly if you're a woman, but also in many of the countries if you're a man, you go to prison. You might not get back out. Wouldn't you love Megan Rapinoe to be using her platform to point out things like I just did about Iran and how unfair it is in those countries that women don't have basic human rights, instead of deciding to attack the president of a country with more human rights than almost any in the history of the world? Also, how about in this time of incredible division, actually giving us all something to root for, which is the U.S. women's team? And now a lot of people don't even have that, because Megan Rapinoe has gone and made the women's U.S. soccer team political, even though they represent the entire country. It's wild. When we come back, we'll have some fun. Animal Thunderdome and Frank Isola. All that still to come in hour three. Are the Knicks the most cursed franchise in all of sports? I'm sorry, Knicks fans. We'll talk about that as well.
This is Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis.
Live from the Geico Outkick Studios. I'm out of breath. Whew. Just had to run upstairs after checking to see what the front page of the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal were going to look like. I'm a great athlete. There's no denying it. Speaking of great athletes, Vanderbilt men's baseball team last night got the win. I believe we have the audio of the final out, but a couple of stats for you out there. I thought it was the most entertaining sporting event on television last night, if you don't count the Democratic debates as a sporting event. By the way, Tulsi Gabbard thought she was the best performer on the stage for the Democrats, but think the only person who can actually get elected president that was on the stage is probably Elizabeth Warren last night. But I was watching that. I was watching the U.S. men against Panama, and I was watching Vanderbilt taking on Michigan in the deciding game of the College World Series. Tim Corbin, Vanderbilt men's baseball coach, gets a second national championship. How good of a job has he done historically? Vanderbilt had only been to three NCAA tournaments in the history of the program when Tim Corbin took over as head coach at Vanderbilt. They have now been to 15, and they have won two national championships. He's almost won in his tenure at Vanderbilt as many national championships as Vanderbilt had NCAA tournament appearances in baseball when he took over. That's an extraordinary accomplishment. Here's what it sounded like last night as Vanderbilt won their second title under Tim Corbin.
Thomas lines it to center field. Backing up is DeMarco. He'll make the catch, and the Doors have done it. Vanderbilt, baseball national champions for the second time in school history. An 8-2 win over Michigan as Vanderbilt claims the title in Omaha.
If you haven't read and followed this story, I'll be tweeting it out later today. But Donnie Everett was a Vanderbilt baseball pitcher who drowned 3 years ago right as the postseason was beginning. His family, mom and dad, he was their only son. They were both on the field celebrating with Tim Corbin and the Vandy men's baseball team. Seven players were his teammates. Seven guys who were seniors were on that field 3 years ago. They found out that one of their teammates had drowned in an awful disaster, unexpected incident. They served as pallbearers. They overcame that incredible loss, and it feels like a very, very incredible story of sports and healing to have this team come together to win a championship 3 years after his death. Again, there's a video. You can go check it out. Chris Budden from ESPN tweeted it out last night, and I retweeted it, of the Vanderbilt men's baseball team celebrating on the field with the parents of Donnie Everett there with them. Also, the U.S. men get the win in soccer in the Gold Cup over Panama, 1-0. Josie Altidore with a bicycle kick into the goal to give the U.S. the margin of victory. And we've got the U.S. women under siege as a result of Megan Rapinoe saying she wouldn't go to the effing White House. Donald Trump's response which I thought was magnanimous, saying that he's going to invite the women. He's a fan of the team, and he's going to invite the women to the White House, win or lose, even if they will not come. So that story is continuing to percolate out there. We've obviously talked about that. You can go listen to the podcast if you want more discussion of that. We're going to have Frank Isola up with us next to talk about the latest rumor, which is the Knicks potentially being left behind, not getting Kyrie Irving, not getting Kevin Durant. I like to follow the odds markets, and the odds markets now make Kevin Durant a minus 300 favorite, which is a pretty big favorite, to go to Brooklyn. There seems to be knowledge out there that Kevin Durant's going to go to Brooklyn. There's already been talk that Kyrie Irving's going to go to Brooklyn. It's possible that the Knicks, ridiculously, are going to have built their fan base up with the idea of, hey, we're going to get Zion Williamson. Hey, we're going to get Kevin Durant. Kyrie Irving, yes, we're trading Kristaps Porzingis, but everything's going to work out well for us. And now what they might get, DeMarcus Cousins. Yeah, that's a big difference. That team is still going to be awful. We'll see what ends up happening. But if the Knicks lose out to Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving and they both stay in the city of New York and just choose to go to Brooklyn, that's a pretty incredible story. I feel like Knicks fans may well be the most cursed for the last 20 years or so of anyone in pro sports, and certainly the most cursed of anyone in pro sports in a major market franchise like the Knicks. Okay, I teased it for a little while. Let's go ahead and cue the music, boys. It's time for the Animal Thunderdome.
Ladies and gentlemen.
I'm just glad I was there.
Boys and girls.
I thought he thought I was like this ginormous piece of chicken.
Dying time's here.
I had a boa constrictor stuck to my face.
Ma'am, you have a what?
This is Animal Thunderdome.
All right, Danny G, I think you have some audio for us. What's this story about a grandma and a cobra?
You are going to love this. All right, let's go to Bucks County. This is outside of Philadelphia. Channel 10, NBC 10 has the story.
My gladiolus are about to bloom.
At first glance, you'd think great-grandma Kathy Kehoe couldn't hurt a fly.
I usually use clippers for this.
Until yesterday, when the 73-year-old saw something lurking in her Falls Township garden.
I said a bad word. I said, that's a bleep. Cobra.
This 5-foot-long Asian cobra. She snapped these pictures, and then the school bus driver did something unexpected. Grabbing this shovel.
This is how you have to go at it if you're going to, you know, decapitate something.
The great granny stalked the potentially lethal cobra into the grass.
I nudged his tail. He stopped. He raised his hood. He turned around. And that's when I got him.
Right through the top of its venomous head. She shouted for help, but paused.
I really felt bad. I, like, apologized to the snake. I was like, I'm sorry this had to happen. Because you don't belong here.
A passerby called animal control, and officers collected the now dead cobra. Kathy told us she went after the snake to protect the kids in the neighborhood.
I still can't believe I did it. It was almost like instinct. Like, really, I thought of, like, my great-grandson. I thought of you kids. There's babies in here.
As for the cobra, this apartment complex is the same one where officials removed 20 venomous snakes, including cobras, back in March. This makes 21.
The strength goes into the seed and not into the bulb.
You'd think Kathy Kehoe couldn't hurt a fly, but a deadly cobra.
It was just kind of like looked around at me like, what are you doing, lady? And I was going to have to kill you, pal.
Those are amazing quotes, but I want to just pause here for a sec. I would poop all over myself if a freaking cobra showed up in my yard. I'm not kidding. If I was out in my yard doing anything, and I saw a snake, I would be incredibly nervous. If the snake then raised itself up and the hood spread out and I saw that it was a cobra, I would lose my mind. And honestly, I'm not even kidding about this. I would seriously contemplate selling the house because I'd be like, there's a cobra on the loose. I'm never going outside again. And what if that cobra gets in? And this who is the lunatic that had all these poisonous snakes in an apartment complex? I mean, can you imagine sharing a wall with a guy with 20 poisonous snakes in his apartment? How is that possible? And one of them just got away? And a cobra was just loose in Philly? Bucks County, I know Bucks County well. One of my good buddies from Bucks County from college. I can't even imagine. I can't even remotely imagine having a loose cobra in the Philadelphia metropolitan area.
She chopped its head off those with
quotes.
A shovel.
We got to pull some of those quotes.
Oh, yes. That evil laugh she gave, too, when she was recounting her story.
I mean, she went toe-to-toe with the cobra, and all she had was a shovel?
Yeah, and it's not like, you know...
I mean, a cobra bites you, you might die.
It's not like
especially
one of those big...
Especially if you're 70. Do we have anti-cobra venom in Philadelphia?
It's not like one of the big Lowe's shovels, either. It's one of those small shovels. So she, like, went up to this thing and chopped its head off.
Like, how big of a shovel?
The one-handed shovel.
Oh, man. That is, which means that she could have easily been struck by the cobra as she tried to chop its head off.
Yeah, she had to walk up. You know, it's not
she had
like,
to get up on the cobra.
Right.
She squared up on the cobra.
She did. And that makes the story even more amazing.
We need to try to get this woman on. I want to know, honestly, because that's the whole story. They barely talked about the fact that there's a cobra. Right? I mean, I feel like the idea that it's, you know, like the local news totally underplayed the fact that this is a cobra. I mean, cobras kill thousands of people. And I don't think that's hyperbole in the countries where there are cobras, you know, kind of running rampant. Where? Like Egypt? Like Cleopatra, I remember a cobra killed Cleopatra. I'm trying to think of all the countries in India. Don't they have cobras in India where all the people are always playing the flutes and the cobras are dancing? I mean, they kill thousands of people every year. So, I mean, the idea that this granny, great granny, just squared up on the cobra with a small shovel.
Yeah, she grabbed a shovel the size of your arm and walked right up to it and chopped its head off.
Yeah, that's unbelievable. All right, we have another unbelievable story, but I actually want to save it for tomorrow.
Do you? Okay. Because I found audio on this, too.
I want more details about this story to emerge in the day that we talk about it. There's a report that a man was captured by a bear for a month in a cave in Russia. And this is from a reputable newspaper, and it's been spread on television, right? Where's Eddie? Eddie, you saw this on television, too?
Yeah, it was on your boy Tucker Carlson's show.
Yeah, it used to be my boy. He won't have me on the show anymore. I haven't gotten an invite in a long time.
Your ex-boy then.
Yeah, my ex-boy. I don't know. I haven't been on Fox News in a long time. I don't know what happened. I was killing it for him. Got my own television show. I don't know if they're nervous because I got my own television show now. But I mean, they haven't invited me on. CNN banned me. I understand why I haven't been on there. MSNBC actually invited me on, but I haven't gotten a Fox News invitation recently. My boy Al Sharpton invited me on the show a while back. I couldn't do it because I was traveling. But, I mean, even Al Sharpton will have me on. Fox News hasn't had me on lately. All right, so when we come back, we're going to talk with Frank Isola. By the way, but before we do, I want to come in with the crew. Is, like, if you saw a cobra, Dub, if you live in Nashville where I do, don't you think you might poop yourself if, like, you were just wherever you are in Nashville where you live too, and, like, suddenly you looked over and a cobra rose up and kind of spread out its whatever that thing is called, its hood. I guess it's a cobra hood. I don't know what you call that. And it was staring right at you. Don't you think you might lose your mind?
Well, I'll tell you what I wouldn't do. I wouldn't grab a 10-inch hand shovel and chop its head off. I don't have the balls for that.
There's no way. I mean, and again, I if she gets bitten, do we have cobra anti-venom in America that's easy to access? Because I think every snake, in order to survive, like there's rattlesnake anti-venom, copperhead, you know, the snakes that usually exist naturally in the United States. And my other fear is that nincompoop who had 21 poisonous snakes, does this mean that if there had been multiple cobras out, that we could just suddenly start to have cobras that live in the United States? Is it warm enough in Philadelphia for a cobra to survive like a winter? I've got the whole country shook right now because if we got cobras just running around, what's to stop them from reproducing like has happened with all the pythons and anacondas and whatnot? I mean, there are probably cobras now living in the Everglades, right?
I'm reading here about the anti-venom.
Yeah.
It says that the venom, well, you have to get the cure injected immediately after the bite occurs. And sometimes unfortunately, they have to wait for it to be flown in.
Yeah, right. Like, I don't imagine they have cobra venom just waiting in Philadelphia in case somebody gets bitten by a cobra. So combining that with the fact that the granny's over 70, I would think that your odds of dying from a snake bite increased based on your age, right? I mean, because your body's just not as strong at 73 like the great-grandma was, although her body seems pretty strong, as it would have been at 23 or 33 or 43 or something like that. So I would think that it's even more dangerous for her. Like, she probably dies of a cobra bite if instead she doesn't win that life or death struggle.
Yeah, it says cobra venom spreads rapidly in its victim's bloodstream, causing respiratory failure and death.
I mean, I think that – I'm not kidding when I said I think cobras kill thousands of people every year in the world. Eddie, what would you do in L.A.? It's fertile in L.A., warm in L.A. Theoretically, there could be cobras living all over the place if you saw an actual cobra and it raised up and spread its head.
I would be shocked, first of all, because I of all of the creatures I would not expect to see here in California would be a cobra. I agree, though, with Dub. I might try and kill it with a normal-sized shovel. Where
oh,
I'm, you know,
there is
way
no
away
way
from
I'm trying
it.
To kill it with a normal-sized shovel. If I had a gun, I might just sit there and fire away at it. Maybe gangster style sideways, you know.
I did say just
gunning away with it.
But like the handheld little shovel that you use like a garden, are you she's crazy.
Yeah, I mean absolutely crazy. Roberto, what are you doing?
I'm running, man. I ain't getting next to that cobra. That's crazy. The lady's got some balls.
Huge brass balls, and she killed the cobra. So we need to pull a couple of those cuts because her accent is also pretty outstanding. Okay, the Knicks are an epic disaster, and so was Megan Rapinoe. We'll hit on both of those when we come back. This is Outkick on Fox Sports Radio.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific.
Welcome back, Geico Outkick Studios. Final segment, Thursday edition. Big stories out there for everybody just waking up, starting off your morning. Should spend more time hanging out with the show. Make sure you download the podcast. And make sure that you subscribe to my new Wins and Losses podcast. We've had 5 guests so far. This week's guest is ESPN and SEC Network's Paul Feinbaum. I think you guys are really going to enjoy these conversations. The feedback has been phenomenal. If you'll go rate it, I'd appreciate that. But these are long-form conversations. It's summer. You're on the road a lot. You're traveling. Maybe you're sitting by the beach. Don't want to read a book. Maybe you're sitting by the pool. You want something to listen to, or you got your kids in the car and they're driving you crazy and you want to listen to something while you're on a car, a long family car trip vacation. Pop them in. I guarantee you'll love them. They're a couple of hours in length sometimes. Jason Whitlock, SEC Commissioner Greg Sankey, Shannon Terry, who sold 2 different companies for $100 million or more, Washington State football coach Mike Leach, a new one every week. This week is Paul Feinbaum. I'm telling you, you guys are going to enjoy him. Make sure you download the Wins and Losses podcast. But big stories out there. Vanderbilt wins its 2nd national title. To me, in the world of baseball, the most amazing stat about this is that Vanderbilt had been to 3 NCAA tournaments before they hired Tim Corbin. They now have won 2 national championships, and he's been to 15 NCAA tournaments. David Williams, Vanderbilt former athletic director, just died a couple of months ago, but he deserves a tremendous amount of credit for what he did bringing Tim Corbin to Vanderbilt and getting that program rolling. NBA free agency moving closer and closer. A couple of different odds updates for you. I know there's a lot of noise. A lot of different prognosticators out there are going to tell you what they expect to happen. I'd rather look at what the money is telling us is going to happen. And right now, the Brooklyn Nets are a big favorite to sign Kevin Durant. They are minus 300 to sign Kevin Durant. The money has come pouring in on the Brooklyn Nets to get Kevin Durant. That's a big story. Money has also now started to pour in on Kawhi Leonard. Kawhi now minus 200 to stay with the Toronto Raptors. So the 2 best free agents out there, Kawhi Leonard and Kevin Durant, we won't know maybe for a few days what exactly they're going to decide to do, but already people have started to vote with their own money. Minus 300, Kevin Durant now favored to go join the Brooklyn Nets, and minus 200, Kawhi Leonard now favored to stay with the Toronto Raptors, over moving to the LA Clippers. Those would be intriguing decisions. May end up being that the most drama ends up surrounding what Kemba Walker's going to do before all is said and done. The Dallas Mavericks and the Boston Celtics are both reportedly chasing him. Now, if you are a Knicks fan and you just heard me laying out the different parameters there and expectations based on the offshore odds markets, it's now becoming, it appears, increasingly clear that the Knicks moved Kristaps Porzingis and freed up all of the salary cap room, and it doesn't appear that any of the major candidates that they had hoped to sign are actually going to come to New York. Think about this for a minute. Zion, Kevin Durant, and Kyrie Irving. That was the desperate fever dream that was somewhat at least realistic to crave if you were a Knicks fan. Now, Zion is going to New Orleans. He's already been drafted. Anthony Davis, there was talk of Anthony Davis potentially to the Knicks now. He's now out in LA. It appears that both Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant aren't just going to spurn you and give you the Heisman. They're actually going to do something even more, I would imagine, difficult for Knicks fans to handle. They are actually going to go to Brooklyn, oddsmakers would tell you right now. So in addition to the Knicks swinging and missing on every one of their major targets, now you have the possibility of losing those guys to Brooklyn. It's a hard-up time to be a Knicks fan. And for many of you, to close here, it's also a hard-up time to be a U.S. Women's National Team fan. Megan Rapinoe teed off on the president, said she didn't want to go to the effing White House. Video went viral yesterday. Now, Donald Trump responded yesterday. I thought handled this thing in a pretty good manner, as magnanimous as you could have hoped, especially from the president when people attack him. He said, look, I'm a fan of the U.S. women's team. I think they should be focused on trying to win the World Cup instead of worrying about me or politics or anything like that. They got France on Friday, but Trump said, you know what? I'll invite them to the White House. Even if they don't like me, they can come. Even if they don't win the World Cup, I'll still invite them to come visit the White House because I am a fan of theirs. That's pretty magnanimous of Donald Trump. I think he handled this actually really well, and I think Megan Rapinoe handled it really poorly. I think this is an ugly look for the U.S. women's soccer team to have their team captain, the head of the women's national team, feuding with the president of the United States in the middle of what would be a World Cup run. U.S. women just haven't been very likable so far. They score 13 goals on Thailand, celebrate excessively, and now you got the team captain going after Donald Trump before they even win a championship. I got to tell you, I went to the 2015 Women's World Cup final. I really enjoyed it. Loved being there in Vancouver to watch us beat Japan. Thought that the U.S. women were an incredibly engaging team. But I don't find them very likable right now so far. And I think there are a lot of you out there who agree with me. You want the national team to win. You hope that they do. But you also don't find them to be that likable. And that's unfortunate for the U.S. women in a time when they could have been trying to bring everybody together. Instead, like so many other people, they're intent on dividing us all. My name is Clay Travis. Appreciate you spending Thursday with me on OutKick. This is Fox Sports Radio.